You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Series 2, Episode number 13 for December 14th, 2022. This is J.J. Sefton, and I am joined once again by the on-the-mend, hopefully, co-blogger and dear friend CBD. CBD, how are you doing today?
I'm doing a hell of a lot better than I was. I was traveling a couple weeks ago and caught the chest cold from hell just in time for the flight home. So I apologize if I sound more like a duck than usual, but hopefully within a week or two or 6 months, I'll feel fine and I'll be able to flap my wings as what I've been accused of recently as a never Trumper, which I thought was quite amusing.
If you go look at it this way, you load up on some nice chicken soup, and if that fails, you can always go to Canada where they'll cure you by assisted suicide, which I think is the thing today up in Canada. But there you go.
Unbelievable. 2,500 years of Western philosophy and Western culture has devolved into exactly what it fought against, which was the devaluing of human life. And it took us a long, long time to make human life valuable. And now Western society is rushing to the abyss of essentially wholesale murder. And we see it more and more with euthanasia, whether voluntary or involuntary. We see it in so many parts of society where life simply is not valued. Abortion is the perfect example of that. But euthanasia has crept back into the news, and it's disturbing and terrifying.
It is. And, you know, you speak of the devaluing of life, and that's just on so many levels. There's also, we were just talking beforehand, how the sexualization of children in both really just the mainstreaming of pedophilia, plus the whole transgender madness that has swept the world now, as if, a child has, parents feel that a child is has some sort of a mental imbalance or something is going on, which is probably easily explainable, some sort of problem. And they say, immediately he or she is a girl trapped in a boy's body and vice versa. And we have to do radical surgery to chop off the genitals, chop off the breasts, and turn him into a girl. This is just absolute insanity. And the sort of the emblematic of this is the signing of this Respect for Marriage Act, the Orwellian named Respect for Marriage Act, at the White House yesterday, which does nothing but basically devalue the institution of marriage by persecuting really in Christian, Judeo-Christian foundations of what marriage is and what the family is. And Joe Biden himself even said that if you merely disagree with this, or if you protest or object to it, it equates you as being either an anti-Semite and a homophobe. There's no difference, and a bigot. And the person that was invited to the White House was this drag queen known as Marty Cummings, or as I call him, Dick Cummings, who recently tweeted something about encouraging children to sing and also to perform fellatio. This is how low we have sunk.
Amazing. Well, I cheerfully embrace my new persona as an anti-Semite and a homophobe. If that's what it takes, that's what I'll do. You know, the objectification of children by demeaning them into simply a collection of sexual parts is part and parcel with the devaluing of human life. Human life is simply far, far too complex to objectify it as a penis or a vagina. It simply does not work that way. And yet that is what they have done. And of course, it's the typical progressive can't, we are being turned into cogs in this great new order machine that Soros and Klaus Schwab and a couple dozen other people in the world are ramming down our throats. But the fact is that we have learned over 2,500 years that man is unique. We are not objects. We are unique and special. And turning us simply into sexual objects negates that. And obviously, that's one of their goals, and they're doing quite well, unfortunately.
The devaluing of the individual and turning it into the mass. And once you do that, you you know, that's it's and what is it? It's the state, and the state rules over everything. You can't have, this is why you have all these 5-year plans and how everything is being, you know, you micromanage everything from the economy to the way you live, to medicine, to what you eat and so on and so forth, because it's because individual choices and individual preferences cannot be, it cannot be allowed in that situation. It's impossible to manage it. And even if you try to do that, if you try to manage just people as treating them as one mass of humanity or one thing that wants the same things, that desires the same things, as we've seen time and time again in history, it all turns into a massive failure. Not only that, it costs the lives of millions of people into a mass grave. And it's just, it's madness. So whether you're turning children into sex objects, even if you allow them to be born in the first place, then this is par for the course. We are, the devaluation of human life is just is proceeding apace.
What you said was very interesting, and that is that that our choice is being taken away from us. But what the left does so very, very well is they use that illogic of, oh, you cannot run your life as a unique and special human being. You have to obey the rules of society. However, if you are a 13-year-old girl who's a little bit confused, we are going to give you a wonderful choice. Here is your choice. What would you like? And that's perverse.
Well, yeah, and it's not even a choice, because if you're confused about who you are, you have doctors who are being trained now to force you to really say that you have a disease and you have some sort of thing called gender dysphoria, which will be treated not really as a psychological problem, but as a medical problem and as a condition to help you to discover what your true self is, which is being a boy, and vice versa. If you're a boy, you'll discover your true self as being a girl. And so, but if you go against that, if you complain against that, as many doctors have, and in California, for example, the episode of being prosecuted or having your license revoked, if you go against the standard meme of COVID and the COVID vaccines as objecting to them, you could lose your license of practicing medicine. And so you shut up and you either go along or you get out of it. And it's just, this is insidious at every level.
But this is the hill on which we need to die. You know, the idea that some physician in a woke medical school can look at a 13-year-old girl or a 14-year-old boy and say, yes, the perfect solution to your transient and very typical confusion about the world around you is to chop your penis off and make an ersatz vagina. Or chop your breasts off and sew up your vagina and sort of hope to make some sort of thing that might look like a penis. That's insanity. That's child abuse. That is malpractice, and it should be criminal. And we discussed earlier, Jordan Peterson wrote about this recently, and I listened to his comments about his editorial. He doesn't pull any punches. They need to go to jail. And I agree 100%. Any physician that recommends any sort of gender transitioning or gender reassignment surgery for anybody other than an adult, and that in and of itself is insane. But if he recommends it for a minor, his license should be taken away and he should be sent to jail.
The state getting involved in this, and this is also going back to the COVID example, but I'm sure that it's going to sooner or later wend its way with the transgenderism, is I believe there was a couple that, and whether you agree with this or disagree with this or not, it's still the parents and their child. The child was undergoing surgery or undergoing treatments for some sort of disease or being hospitalized and needed a blood transfusion. And the parents refused to allow the doctors to give him blood that had been, well, if you want to use the word for lack of it, tainted with someone who had donated, who had taken the COVID vaccines. And knowing what we do about the COVID vaccines, I mean, you know, there are definite risks in it. And the parents said, whether you agree with it or not, again, they said, I don't want my child to have this. And they literally threatened to force the child to have this vaccine and to take custody of the child away from the parents for not wanting to have a vaccine that of a donor who had the COVID vaccine, blood that from a donor that had the COVID vaccines. And this is insidious. The state is becoming, you know, mother, father, parent, and so on and so forth. And this will happen mostly
stormtrooper, unfortunately.
Exactly. We are at a point where, you know, it takes a lot to get people riled up. And unfortunately, we have I guess we have a sleeping society. We're sleep slouching or into a mass grave sooner or later. But when you come after your children, when you come after, you know, this I think is a line that people are not allowing to cross. And as we've seen with Loudoun County, with the school board, the objecting to the curriculum there, which was anti-American and also pro-sexualization, the transgender thing, the state got involved, and the school boards appealed to the Department of Justice all the way to the White House to have these parents in Loudoun County, Virginia, declared as insurrectionists and as terrorists for opposing this curriculum. So we are heading there. And I think we set off the air, and at the risk of, you know, I don't want to, and I alluded to it in my post this morning on the morning report, you know, you're getting to a point where some people need to really, and as you said, with Jordan Peterson, people need to go to jail. I think it could theoretically be a lot worse than that. If you touch our children in this way, you know, you're literally inciting a revolt. And let's just leave it at that, I guess.
Yes. But I agree with you 100%. Wow. Let's take a break, and we'll be back with the evolution of CBD as a never-Trumper.
Right. And you're still an anti-Semite, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Now you're really an anti-Semite, which is funny because you're Jewish and you're the worst one. Anyway, back in a minute. We're back, JJ Sefton with CBD for the podcast, and our next topic on the Hit Parade here is the confirmation that CBD is not only an anti-Semite, but he's a raging anti-Semite never-Trumper of the worst variety. So as has been exposed by the commenters, because I had the nerve, I guess, to include Michael Walsh's very good essay about Donald Trump's candidacy, or the fact that he should not be running and that his time has passed. The only criticism I would have, and Michael, you can, if you want to chime in one of these days when we have you back on, is that I think he does have a tinge of a personal animus towards Donald Trump. But that said, if you read his posts and his objections, if you read through that and how he describes it, they're all cogent and they're great points. And, you know, I've come to the conclusion myself that I don't really think Donald Trump should be necessarily the standard bearer for 2024. Doesn't mean that if he is that I'm not going to vote for him, because of course I will. But again, there are points to be said that do disqualify him for that. And because I posted that, the commenters over at Ace of Spades just kind of like ripped me a new one and ripped Michael Walsh a new one without necessarily, you know, saying why they disagree, just saying that he's, you know, he's an asshole, he's a this, he's a that,
he's a traitor, you know, which I thought was
amazing. They called him a traitor for posting that. But I'm going, but when you, CBD, jumped in to defend it, man, they jumped down your throat pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not really too worried about that. But what I found very interesting, and actually a little bit galling nowadays, is that Donald Trump came on the stage in, 2015? And he has done a tremendous amount of good in the United States. He has opened our eyes more than they were before to the existential problems that we have in Washington, the deep state, overwhelming bias in the media, this awful and malign union of corporate America and political America. And for that, we owe him a huge, huge thank you and a debt that might never be able to be repaid. That being said, his intense focus on relitigating the 2020 election, I think, has watered down his message. It's a tired message, and he has no solutions. And what I wrote on Ace of Spades in the comments was that I want to hear his answer to the theft of the 2020 election. I want to hear how he's going to fix it. I don't want to hear that he's going to take these people to court, because that's not going to work. Is it a good idea to take them to court? Sure, let's litigate this. But side by side with the litigation of the 2020 election has to be Donald Trump's cogent complete plan to revamp voting in America so that this never happens again. And I don't hear that from him. All I hear is a tired, old-sounding man whining about how this was taken from him. And I don't think that's a good look.
You know, I tend to agree with that. I do agree with that, I must say. But I will say this, and this is always my slogan, if you will, going forward, is that the 2020 election and what happened, and now 2022, what happened cannot and should never, ever be forgotten nor forgiven. But that said, you can't necessarily run on that as just as a campaign that it was stolen and I want my seat back and I want justice. You have to, as you say, CBD, address the problem and say, structurally, how are we going to fight this kind of now institutionalized and absolutely legal system of, you know, between the mail-in ballots, the ballot harvesting, and all of this stuff that greases the wheels of fraud that the Democrats will use all to the max, and which Republicans will never, ever really embrace. Or if they do, it will, who knows what will happen with it. But that has to be the focus, along with the fact that saying all of the things I've done or that I tried to do during my first term have been utterly and completely destroyed by this, by Biden and this cabal that have been basically hijacked the country. And we've got to get back to drilling for oil and getting the economy moving again, getting people back to work and negating all of this horrible destruction that has wreaked serious damage on our economy, if it can ever be reversed, even if Trump or DeSantis or whoever is put back in the White House. But you're right. Criticizing Trump does not make you an anti-Semite. It doesn't make you a traitor, and it doesn't make you a never-Trumper. Legitimate criticism of the man. On the contrary, the ironic thing is someone just saying Michael Walsh is a traitor, period, and that's the end of the comment, is the exact same thing of what they're accusing you of being. And it's just, it is ridiculous. So
exactly. You know, this is the tactic of the left. I'm a fascist. I'm a Nazi. Well, okay, that's great. Call me a fascist. Call me a Nazi. Now use your big, you know, your big boy words and explain why I'm a fascist and a Nazi. Well, you can't, because those are simply buzzwords. And calling Michael Walsh a traitor is silly. And calling me a never-Trumper is just silly. I have legitimate complaints about Donald Trump. If Donald Trump shifted focus and became, you know, a clarion call for limited government, and it's, you know, it's mourning in America again, that would be great, and my support for him would be energized. But I haven't heard that yet. And if he starts tomorrow morning, I'm going to be his biggest fan, and I hope that he does. But right now, you know, this cranky, whiny, bitching and moaning about what happened before without anything substantive and hopeful to say about what is going to happen if he becomes president is unbecoming of somebody who really can go down in history as the savior of America 2.0. Once again, I hope it happens. If it doesn't, I think that we have Ron DeSantis in the wings. Hopefully he will consider running if Trump continues to flounder. After DeSantis, I wouldn't be unhappy with Youngkin. And I'm sure there are a few other names out there that people who are more aware of the political landscape than I could suggest.
We have a lot of great people, and I think this is a good segue into you know, sort of a close subject to it, and something that's related to it. You know, we have what's going on in Arizona with Carrie Lake, and God bless her. She is, you know, she actually has a case. To sort of circle back a little bit here, you know, people say, you know, the left will always say, well, the Trump, you know, the courts, you know, his case, he never had a case in the courts. And I'm saying it's not that he didn't have a case. It's just the courts refused to hear the case. But at least now with Carrie Lake, there is enough massive evidence. Not that they didn't have really a massive evidence back then. But in this particular instance, there was enough evidence that the court said, look, we are going to fast track your trial. And before the swearing in ceremony of abortion mouse Katie Hobbs to see what's what. And if you do, we're going to, hopefully they'll prevent her from being, from being sworn in, and have Carrie Lake actually declared the winner of the election by throwing out a lot of these hokey ballots. And we'll see if that happens. I mean, I don't know what the odds are. I don't know what the court system is like in Arizona, vis-a-vis the political leanings and the political appointees who sit on the bench, I guess, at the Arizona State Supreme Court. But the fact that it's being fast-tracked and being heard is certainly a very positive sign. So with this, this can be a way, if she does win, or even, you know, I hope she does. Let's assume she does, or even if perhaps she doesn't win, if this gets a hearing, a fair hearing, at least it'll open up a lot of eyes to what is going on with these processes that allow ballot harvesting, fraud, you know, ballot dumping, phony addresses, all of this,
exactly.
This nonsense.
That's exactly.
At least it'll put a wedge in the door and open the floodgates, and hopefully 2 years will be enough time. I know we bemoaned it on one of the podcasts with Dave in Florida that, you know, unless they get serious about this, we're gonna lose again in 2024. But let this open the floodgates and let this be the issue that really sparks change and getting back to normal electoral processes.
I think that Carrie Lake is not going to be successful in the courts. However, what you said is vitally important, that it's pulling the curtain back and allowing the massive legal fraud to be exposed. It's probably too late for her, but maybe in 2024, enough of America will say, you know something, this is just ridiculous. We need to change. Maybe that will happen. But this is extraordinarily high profile. I mean, let's face it, who gives a shit about the typical governor and Senate race in Arizona? Nobody does. But this has become quite big, and I think it's, as I said, vitally important that this goes on.
Right. Well, you know, I wouldn't say that it is vitally important. I don't know that nobody gives a shit. I mean, I know Dave in Florida touched upon this with us, is that these state houses are important. It's where the action is, really.
No, I meant that. In normal times, America
exactly
pay much attention to who is the governor of the state of Arizona.
Oh, my apologies. You know, you're absolutely right. But we are living in, to say the least, extraordinary times. And in a way, it's good that these situations alert people to what's going on, just the same way as Rush Limbaugh used to say, nobody really ever gave a damn about the budget and budget deficits and all this kind of arcane talk when your life goes on and you sort of bitch and moan about taxes here and there. But now when we're facing societal collapse with the cost of everything rising and borrowing and quantitative easing destroying the value of the dollar, people are starting to take notice of things like inflation and the budget and this and that. So I think I would hope that, I mean, in a place like Pennsylvania, of course, or even in Michigan, I think it's too late. I think the state houses are now, you know, the states are now captured by the Democrats, and there is no way they are going to give up the ability to rig an election. Let's face it, it is legalized rigging of elections for their benefits. I don't know that they're ever going to give that up. And these are the swing states now. It's basically six states or however many that decide a presidential election, which is kind of insane on the face of it. But who knows? Maybe there will be a groundswell to stop this in enough states that can at least counter this until we can get some sort of a national referendum with all due respect to Herman Cain, my 1-1-1 plan, which is one legal person, one vote on one day, and that's it. So will we ever get to that? I don't know, but that's the dream. And by the way, Carrie Lake, I think, is a superstar in the making. I think her demeanor, the fact that she fights, the fact that she doesn't take a lot of bullshit from the press or of anybody. I mean, she's in the MAGA mold, in the DeSantis mold. And I think that bodes well for us.
I agree. She's always one step ahead of the press, which amuses me because they haven't figured that one out yet.
Didn't she used to be an anchor?
She
knows it.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. And yeah, and they don't, which is sad. And that's why DeSantis is so successful with the media. He's simply smarter than they are and plans a little bit. It doesn't take him very long. I mean, you can script out the questions that they're going to ask at every single press conference. So why not spend half an hour with your press secretary every day going over the appropriate answers to their ridiculous questions? That's what he does.
Oh, by the way, I forget her name. His press secretary is the one that's in many ways responsible for that. She I forget her name, and she's out front on Twitter and interviewing. And when they try to hammer her with the "Did you stop beating your wife yet?" questions, I mean, she shuts them down, and she's brilliant at it. I forget her name. Yeah. So more people like that in the, you know, in the communications department and the press secretaries, and of course the candidates who just don't take any guff. And the one thing about Trump, and everyone says Trump is mean. He's not mean. He's just, for the first time, you had someone who just didn't take shit from the press and call them out on their bullshit. And whether they chose to believe it or not, you know, of course, they spun it as he's being mean or he's attacking the press. And you have these idiots like Jim Acosta, who pretends to be the second coming of you know, what is it? I forgot who it is. I'm trying to think of a legitimate journalist. I can't think of one.
Wow. I can't think of a single legitimate journalist.
Who was the editor of the famous editor from the 30s from the Emporia, Kansas Journal? I forgot who it is. Whatever it is. But anyway, you get the message. So we need more people like this who could just tell the press to go shove it and also back up their words with actions, like they did with shipping the illegal aliens up to Martha's Vineyard. And with the threatening, you know, and pulling Disney's tax exempt status from Orlando, and all of a sudden they said, oh, maybe we shouldn't be doing these things like woke films and so on and so forth, or woke.
Well, that's Disney's prerogative. I think it's perverse and vile, and I'm going to try very, very hard never to give them another penny as long as I live. But as a corporation, that's their prerogative to run their corporation as they see fit. But when they involve themselves in the political process, yes, that's the line they should not cross. And Ron DeSantis and the Florida legislature smacked them down for that, appropriately so.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's take a break. I have to cough up a lung, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Cough away. We are back. JJ Seth from the CBD, CBD, CVD, but he needs a CVS with his lung.
I hope I don't have VD, though.
No VD, no. It's enough that you're an anti-Semite and a homophobe, but just please don't have VD. Anyway, we're back. Katya Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. It's episode number 13, and we're going to shift a little bit of focus to foreign affairs, and we'll start off with the unrest in China, which ostensibly was supposedly sparked by the Chinese people having enough of these really draconian lockdowns. But what's going on really is now it is a revolution against the spark of a revolution against the regime itself. Xi and his cohorts and his allies have lifted some of the restrictions, but there is a definite undercurrent of unrest going on in China that is, that can't be discounted. And it does possess a potential existential threat to the Chinese Communist Party. Of course, this is a group of people that have no qualms about killing millions of their own citizens, whether it's the Cultural Revolution or whether it's that poor guy standing in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square. And he can multiply him by tens of thousands of people that we perhaps don't really know of that were disappeared in the wake of that. So will Red China collapse? Will the Communist Party collapse? I don't know. But man, you've got millions and millions of people, potentially a billion people, who are dissatisfied with what's going on, and anything is possible.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, as long as the Chinese economy was growing, you know, 5, 10, 15% a year, even though much of that was artificial. But as long as the middle class was growing and there was some hope among the masses that they could succeed, that they could do better, the Chinese Communist Party could do whatever they wanted. And I understand that. However, you know, all good things must end, and their, you know, 10% growth per year ended. And whether the current unrest is because of COVID or the unrest is a general dissatisfaction with the Communist Party and COVID is merely the excuse is a question that I simply cannot ask. And at this point, I don't care. I hope, I fervently, sincerely hope that China continues to have unrest, that it grows, that they begin to look within much, much more than they have in the last 15 or 20 years. Because the expansionism of Communist China into the rest of the world, I think, is a very, very dangerous thing. We see their attempts at taking over most of Africa is chilling because they'll be as bad, if not worse, than Belgium in most of Africa.
Some of the things to take note of China over the years, which obviously being a totalitarian regime, you only get glimpses of what they want you to see. But the birth rate there has, despite the fact that there are 1 billion people, because of the One China policy, they're headed for disaster within 100 years in terms of population growth, believe it or not. The Evergrande real estate development company, their tanking is akin to the 2008 housing crisis here, and perhaps even worse. They're on a bubble right there. You also have the fact that after Mao, and with the coming of people like Deng Xiaoping and Hu Jintao, who was arrested at the last party conference by Xi's goons, which is kind of bizarre to see him being pulled away. But in any event, the introduction of a sort of a pseudo capitalism into the communist economy, is in many ways what got them kickstarted. And you have a whole generation of Chinese youth who really, are weaned on social media to the extent that they can use social media, on Western products, on computers, on cell phones, on clothing, on fashion, and so on and so forth. And despite being a totalitarian regime, they've gotten a taste of a little bit of Western capitalism and a little bit of Western freedom, and they like it. And now all of a sudden, here's Xi, who fancies himself as the second coming of Mao Zedong and wants an actual cultural revolution and wants to be emperor for life of China. And so you add all of these things together on top of the whole zero COVID policy lockdowns. And, not just the average Chinese person, but people within the Chinese Communist Party who are Xi's opponents to this are not happy. And there's been speculation that because the epicenter of the lockdowns were like in Shanghai and a number of other places, especially Shanghai, it is a center of opposition to Xi's rule within the Communist Party. So it hit that city particularly hard, the lockdowns. And so people think in terms of being a retribution and a way to wrest control and to suppress any kind of dissent within the Communist Party. So all of these things together, does not necessarily bode well for him. Now, what his reaction is going to be, he's going to lash out and invade Taiwan or so on and so forth. Who knows? But I agree with you, CBD. This is some very, ironically enough, interesting times for the Chinese.
I'm not sure that he has grand philosophical goals in mind. I think he is simply a thug who enjoys power and sees any challenge to that power as existential. Again, I don't know that he sees himself as the second coming of Mao. I don't think that he sees himself as the second coming of anything. I think he simply is a dictator and enjoys the power and wants to control China. And unfortunately for him, fortunately for us, as you pointed out, the Chinese people have gotten a taste of a little bit of freedom and a little bit of capitalism, and they like it, and they don't want it to go away. And what really, really amuses me is that these draconian lockdowns have simply created the best goddamn laboratory in the world for seeing what happens when you lock down. Because there are 1 billion Chinese people who have never been exposed to COVID. I doubt there are 5 million people in America who haven't been exposed to COVID. The fact is that COVID is, for most people, a cold. And in many, many people, it exhibits subclinical issues. So you get COVID, you don't even know you've gotten COVID, but you have some sort of immunity. That does not exist in China. You lock down an entire city and you shoot people who walk out on the street. I'm exaggerating a little bit, I hope.
They did that in the Philippines, I did, but go ahead.
And you've got this incredible, incredible possibility for this disease to go rushing through the entire country. And it would take a heart of stone not to laugh.
Right. The irony of that, though, is that the Chinese, probably with the help of Anthony Fauci, unleashed this disease on us as a means to, you know, to and it did succeed in lousing up the Trump economy, the American economy, and lousing up our freedoms and helping to rig the 2020 election. And ironically enough, as you say, they've unleashed a biological weapon, which they thought would affect us, and actually has the potential, as because of these lockdowns and because of the lack of exposure and herd immunity, to really, you know, rip through the Chinese population with a fury. And that is, again, not that the Chinese really, you know, the government really cares if a few million or 10 million or 100 million of their people die, because, you know, that's their mentality. They just do not care. Mao killed 60 million people because of the Cultural Revolution. He's actually the greatest mass murderer, you know, in history, greater than Hitler and Stalin even. But Hitler and Stalin get all the press because, or at least Hitler gets all the press because he's a fascist and a right wing fascist, despite the fact that it's National Socialism. But I digress.
I'd like to point out that that you're ignoring Pol Pot, and I don't think that's fair.
Well,
A percentage of his country, he might be the worst one.
Really?
I'm not sure. I'm gonna have to check the math on that. But Pol Pot,
it's 2 million. He wiped out about 2 million of Cambodians, and Cambodia is not that big.
Yeah,
it's a
tiny little country. Well, anyway, speaking of unrest, we have a little bit of unrest in the Near East. Iran is having some convulsions over what seemed like a trivial and sort of everyday occurrence, which is that their religious police beat a woman to death for having the temerity to show some of her hair or a bit of her ankle. I don't know the details. I don't recall them.
I believe she was not wearing a hijab. Yeah.
Oh my God, the slut. Anyway,
the humanity.
Know, I shouldn't joke about it because there are people dying in Iran to preserve what little freedom they have and hopefully to expand it by bringing down the mullahs. The sad thing about this whole thing going on in Iran is that the Biden administration, in their usual feckless and sleazy manner, is looking at it from the perspective of what can it do for us? And you know something, freedom in Iran can't do much for us in the short term, so they don't care. You know, they mouth some crap, they shove some pablum at us, but they're not doing much to assist the Iranian dissidents and to assist the protesters. And it's going to fizzle. That would be my prediction.
It's worse than that. It's freedom in Iran. It's not that it doesn't do anything for them. It doesn't do anything for their cause of helping to give the mullahs the A-bomb and billions of dollars in aid to prop them up. So they don't, you know, the same thing with Obama. This was happening all through this period where we had that so-called Arab Spring, which was really just an uprising of a lot of Islamists and the toppling of regimes. You know, he was supportive of all of that stuff. But then, of course, when the Iranian people were revolting against the mullahs, Obama quashed that and helped to quash that and did not support them, did not say peep about anything. Same thing here. They want this nuclear deal to the joint whatever nonsense, the JCPOA deal, to be back in effect and to give Iran essentially the green light to develop nuclear weapons. They don't care about the people. So
I don't think that deal is going to go forward. There's so much data that show that it's a horrible idea. And the opposition from the Arab world is significant. And even in Europe, there's a little bit of pushback against it. The question, of course, is whether Biden is going to launch attacks on Iran's nuclear infrastructure. And I doubt very much that he's going to. In fact, my guess is that he would try to prevent Israel from bombing their nuclear facilities.
Yeah, it's an extension of the Obama policies, because Obama, for example, is probably still the president anyway. But, and you know, if you'll recall that Israel, and this was the most galling thing, Israel actually had a deal, a secret deal with Azerbaijan to use their land, which is from the north, it's just north of Iran on the Caspian Sea, and it would have cut their time to target. They would have been able to have a sufficient payload to take out targets, and it would have taken Iranian air defenses completely by surprise, because the attack was coming from the north. And of course, what did Obama do when he found out about it? He tipped off the Iranians and told them. So
yeah, and Azerbaijan said no, which is reasonable. Why should they be involved? They were doing the right thing, and Obama screwed them. So, you know, But that's exactly. Par for the course for Obama. I don't know that he's still president. You know, I think he's too goddamn lazy to do much of anything other than, you know, walk along the beach and preen for the press. I really don't think that he's the one in charge.
Well, it's a cabal of, and if it's not him, then it's definitely the, I think it's Valerie Jarrett. It's,
absolutely.
It's perhaps Susan Rice, Ron Klain to a certain extent, maybe David Axelrod in the mix.
And Powers, what's her name? What's her first name?
Oh, Samantha Power. Samantha, oh my God.
Yeah. She's a real Jew hater from way horrible. Back. Yeah,
so many, well, there's so many of them. And my God, it's just, you know, you don't, you know, with friends like these in the White House, you don't need, you know, whatever. You don't need the John Birch Society, but that's there. Again, we've talked about this in the past. They're calculus, and it's like the same calculus that does not want to see America as the lone superpower. They believe that it is America to be the lone superpower is destabilizing, as if somehow we, you know, our for what we had of our moral, you know, the being the moral authority in the world and the leader of the free world since the end of World War II. Somehow just having us on the top, somehow it destabilizes the world. Yes, we need a Russia, we need a red China, and we need terrorists all over the world to counterbalance us because, of course, you know, we're the source of evil. Same thing with Israel. They can't stand the presence of Israel in the Middle East, which is the most liberal by far society that has ever existed in that region, is somehow destabilizing. So, and plus, it's just good old-fashioned Jew hatred, too.
Oh, yeah, we can never discount that. So let's move on. We're almost done. So I would like to move on to to what I think is a burning topic.
Yes.
And that is that I was looking at a map of the upper Midwest a few months ago, and I looked at Wisconsin.
Hello.
Yes. You know, as some of you might not know, but Sefton lives in Wisconsin. And I used to live in Michigan, so I have some passing familiarity with it. And I looked at the Upper Peninsula, which is, as most of you know, part of Michigan.
They and call it the Upers, yeah, who live
the
up Upers, there. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Upper Peninsula is separated from Michigan by a large lake. There's no way to get to that part of Michigan except by taking a bridge. If you look at Wisconsin, it is blatantly obvious that the Upper Peninsula should be a part of Wisconsin. Geographically, it is seamless. And in fact, the shape of Wisconsin would be much more elegant, I think, if they had the Upper Peninsula. So my recommendation for the people of Wisconsin is to mobilize your state guard, your national guard, and take the Upper Peninsula. And I think that it would distract the people of Michigan enough from their rabid Jew hate in many places and their insanity in reelecting. Oh, my God. What's her name?
Wretched Whitmer.
Yeah.
Gretchen.
Wretched. Yes. Wretched Whitmer for another governorship. And I think you can probably listen. The people of Wisconsin need to take back the Upper Peninsula. I know that Ace of Spades has a couple of people up there. And, you know, maybe you could be the vanguard. Anyway,
a real, you know, it's funny that it's sort of the levity of it. It's, you know, look, there, it's obviously, I think the Upper Peninsula is a conservative part of the state. Am I not mistaken there?
I can't imagine that it isn't.
Right. I mean, there are certain weird, there are parts of here that are, you'd think are, that are rural, that are actually a little bit to the left. But generally speaking, I believe the Upper Peninsula, yeah, the Upers are conservative. So why not? We'll take all we can get. But of course, that just means that the ballot printing presses will have to run that much harder come election time. But
so I was talking to one of our co-bloggers over at Ace of Spades, a misanthropic humanitarian who actually lives up here, up near the Upper Peninsula. And he tells me, and I did not know this, that there was a bit of a push to create the 51st state out of the Upper Peninsula. And they were going to call it Superior, which I thought was quite clever.
Exactly.
But not much came of that plan because there are probably, 10,000 people in the entire Upper Peninsula? I have no idea. I pulled that one out of my butt. So factor of 10.
Well, who cares? I mean, look, how many people are in, I always get this from leftists. They always say, well, look at the size of Wyoming and then look at the size of Rhode Island. Is it fair that Wyoming has two senators and Rhode Island also has two senators?
Dimwits. No, we should take away Rhode Island senators. I agree with that.
Exactly. It's too small. But, you know, funny enough, there was action. There's still the ballot measures are still going through about creating, you know, breakaway counties in Oregon joining Idaho. And of course, the counties in Northern California breaking away and forming the state of Jefferson. I mean, who knows? Newsom will never, you know, the Maoists in California will never allow that. But, you know, it's people are, you know, we sort of in levity speaking of these things, but there is a realignment happening, and it's, you know, it's definitely happening via exodus of population. People are voting with their feet and leaving places like New York and Illinois and heading down to Florida and Texas. So, you know, with that, it could come with a potential geographical realignment. It would be, otherwise we would wind up looking a bit like sort of Bosnia and whatever it is, the former Yugoslavia. But if it doesn't even devolve into a war like that. But,
or Northern Ireland.
Or Northern Ireland. But it's, you know, look, if we can't live together, we might as well just have it, you know, have a divorce somehow, hopefully make it peaceful. But even then, I don't know that it would ever even come to that. But who knows? Interesting rumination, my friend. Interesting.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that, I guess, brings us to the conclusion of another scintillating podcast with my good friend and co-blogger CBD, who I hope is on the mend and his you know, has his autographed copy of Mein Kampf coming in the mail to burnish his anti-Semitic Never Trumper credentials. Yeah, I think, yeah. But anyway, it's been fun. CBD, I'm glad you're on the mend. For CBD, it's JJ Sefton for the podcast Cuckoo Newsletter Speaks, episode 13. We will see you folks soon on the next one.
Thanks for listening, folks.